Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined by Cheryl Lindemann and Mari Garza, and we're your primary selection team here at Cattle. Hey, ladies.
Hello.
How's it going?
Great.
It is
nice.
May.
And is sunshine outside?
Yes, it is.
Like it.
It's warming up finally.
Yes. Finally.
I mean, we've had too much snow too late in April. It's just
too much gray.
May.
Triple blankets even. Are not appropriate in the month of May.
No. But we're approaching Mother's Day. We're actually taping this ahead of Mother's Day. And we know that Father's Day is coming down the pike as well. And we kind of just wanted to talk family this month. So we got, and from a lot of different angles, we've got, you know, birth families, we've got found families. We kind of just wanted to explore that in our picture books,
yes,
novels, whatever we are bringing to the table today, right?
Excellent. Yes. So I'll go ahead and get started. My first title is Ellen Outside the Lines. This is a middle grade novel by A.J. Sass. This was a lovely, lovely middle grade book. It's about Alan Katz, who is a child who lives in Georgia and is off on her first excursion to Barcelona, Spain, with her her private school's kind of like a field trip. It sounds really, really nice.
Sounds wonderful.
But she gets to go with her father and a group of classmates that she knows fairly, gets to know much better on the trip. And one of her main goals is to reconnect with her BFF. She has sensed that she and Laurel are kind of drifting apart, and they do end up rooming together. And there's, you know, the trip involves being on teams, and she's really kind of hoping to be on the same team as Laurel, but that doesn't happen. And there's like a little bit of a shakeup that happens. That doesn't get revealed really until later in the book, but she doesn't end up being with Laurel. She's, you know, put in this group with other classmates. And the thing about Ellen is that she is autistic, and she gets a lot of pleasure from flapping. It just makes her happy. She's also someone who keeps very detailed notes about her schedule. She has what she calls a dot diary. So when they get to Barcelona, you know, the teacher is like, well, this is what we're going to do. And it kind of upends her world because it's not exactly what she was planning on. So the big part of this book is that they're involved in going on these daily scavenger hunt sort of things. And she is with a group of kids who become her friends. And what I really liked about this title is that it had like a whole array of children who are, you know, exploring who they are, what, you know, who they want to be. There is a boy with ADHD who is wanting to be more open about this situation that he has in his life. There is a young Asian boy who has recently broken up with someone who is also in the trip, which makes for awkward because he's gay, and that's why he broke up with his girlfriend. There's Issa, a very confident Latinx non-binary student. And what I kind of, when I was reading this, is like, yeah, you're right. You know, Issa is not someone who necessarily speaks Spanish. She has a little bit of knowledge. But I think that it's easy to sort of stereotype, you know, and think, oh, well, Mari Garza, you of course speak Spanish. Well, I sort of do, but it's kind of interesting just looking at that. And with Ellen, her father, who she lovingly calls Abba, you know, she is Jewish, and I really loved all the references to the Jewish cultural heritage that she has. And there's lots of words sprinkled in Hebrew. I really, really liked it. Metuka means sweetheart. I really enjoyed this title because it's not just a sweet book, but really gives you a great picture of just seeing the many, many different perspectives that children are, you know, interested in and learning about themselves. So that sounds great.
That's very great. Okay. I'm going to jump to a book that we actually have in Y, but it could be an adult graphic novel. It's a series called I Think Our Son is Gay by Okora. This one, I'm not even actually sure what brought it to my attention, but I had grabbed the first four, and they're just really neat slice of life, and it's written from a mother's point of view. It's a mother. The father is in the family, but it goes away for work, so he's out of the house a lot. Two sons, Hiroki, who's just started high school, and Yuri. And what she's starting to realize is that she thinks her son is gay. And it's not a negative, though she worries about how he'll be accepted or things, and it's set in Japan, so there is a stigma there that is part of the story. But it's really just, how can I support him? Is he going to tell me? Am I seeing, you know, looking back at his childhood, are there things that I should have recognized? Are there, not in a negative, again, not in a negative sense, but it's really just, a lot of it is the mother working through, how can she help? How can she support? And just sort of reflecting on this. And it's funny because there's these moments where the son sort of slips up and says, well, whenever I have a boyfriend, and he said, I'm sorry, I meant girlfriend. And, you know, it's just sort of like, he's not terribly subtle. and he, you know, he'll turn bright red and he'll kind of stomp off. And he has these moments with his father who is out so often that when he's back in the household, he's trying to bond in the kind of stereotypical way and sort of says, you know, how are you doing with the girls? And the son, and she's watching these interactions and thinking, we need to figure something else out. But, you know, it is a lot of sort of reflection on it from a parent's point of view that I thought was really fascinating. It's a really well done series.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I had not heard of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's the it is manga, so, you know, back to front for a Western reader. And it is, it actually looks like more of a childhood, or more of a child-focused art style, or teen, maybe-ish. But it's still, it really is, I think, especially anybody with children in the LGBT community, I think it's a really interesting kind of perspective in a graphic novel series.
Yeah, very unique. Excellent. Well, I'm moving on to the next title. This is A Living Remedy, a memoir by Nicole Chung. And Nicole Chung wrote in 2018 a memoir called All You Can Ever Know.
Which is still on my TBR, and I really, really still want to read this.
It's on mine now, too. I did not read that one when it came out, but it was highly acclaimed on every end of year list. And that was really the story of her life as a Korean-American adoptee in the Pacific Northwest, into a Anglo-European white family, into a very small white town, white community, and about that experience, and about her birth family, and all about that, and her identity in that experience. This is one of those books where I read it, and I was like, okay, this is going to be on my end of year best books. We do that every year, and it's on there because it's like you pick up a book, and it's just, I have like funny analogies, it's like butter or something. It's so smooth. It's like, it flows. I could not wait to pick up this book again. I was like, okay, I need to read. I can't wait to read this. And it's a story of really at the heart, why it fit this podcast so well. It's just the most beautiful story of love in a family. It's a Korean adoptee who doesn't have a perfect relationship with her parents. She never did. She never, but she absolutely loves them, and they loved her. And it's all those little details. You have to read the book to kind of discover that. But it's just such a deep and beautiful and love that's really filled with a lot of forgiveness and understanding. But what the story is, it's pretty tough. It's a story about how her father became extremely ill and died really prematurely. And then her mother became also ill and died within the next year. And when her mother died, it was during the COVID pandemic. And so it was right in the beginning where she was really sick. And so she really had difficulty going out there. It was an extremely fraught time to try to be there for her mother. And that complicates things greatly. She grew up in the Pacific Northwest and then went out east for school and worked in the publishing and worked as a writer. And so she's living out east. So she's as far away as she can be and all this is going on. So that's a huge piece of the story. But it's also a story about really working individuals, kind of not even necessarily the working poor. She always considered her parents, you know, middle class workers. However, they didn't have enough resources. Healthcare really failed them.
Right.
They didn't have the resources to get the preventive care. And even when they did get the care, finally, it was too late for her father's condition. And for her mother's, it still amassed huge medical bills and medical debt. And so it's really a story on the side through this beautiful, heartbreaking personal story. It's a story about how our healthcare situation in America and how it fails Americans, how it fails working individuals who really should be guaranteed some health care so that they don't wait until their kidney disease is so advanced that there's not much more that can be done.
Right.
And then disability will kick in, you know, that sort of thing. So it touches on that isn't, in some ways, it's not really what the book is about, but it is the thread that's through it. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those books where she can write about this societal issue through the personal story, and it's even more compelling, and it really hits you, and you feel for the family. But A Living Remedy by Nicole Chung, memoir. Highly recommend this one.
So my next book is a graphic novel. It's Parachute Kids. It's by Betty Tang. And wow, this was a recommendation actually from Cheryl's daughter. I had, of course, heard this book, but had not gotten to it. And I really, really liked it. So Parachute Kids is loosely a term that is often referred to children who are immigrants, undocumented immigrants, who end up in the U.S. without a parent or parents. And I was like, really? I'm like, I've heard of unaccompanied minors that often come from, you know, North America or Central America. But there are, you know, groups of children that for some way or another, their parents get them here, and then the parents have to leave. And that's exactly what happens in Parachute Kids. Now, this is a really humorous book. It's fun. There are some painful things to it. I mean, just like as an adult looking into, like, the racism, you know, that Asian Americans or Asians still experience in the United States. But it's set in the 80s. But you've got three siblings who come to California, and they're from Taiwan. There's a 10-year-old Feng Li. There's also a brother, a sister, older sister, Xia Shi. And she's the one who kind of manages the household. And it's cute how they are trying to, and by the way, the older sister, Shashi, she's really the only one who speaks English well enough to be able to communicate. But the other two children are, you know, trying to learn English, trying to adjust to their classrooms. The youngest, you've got the teacher kind of calling her out and asking her to read aloud. And she's like, well, okay. And the teacher is really doing it in a loving way, but really encouraging her and encouraging her confidence. But I just thought it was funny because the older sister is like kind of in charge of the household and trying to create, you know, cook food and to the best of their ability, find food that is something that they would like to, you know, with the background they come from and the kind of cooking they like. At one point they buy dog food and mistakenly eat it, and they're like, ah! You know, it's the scene is hilarious. But Tang or Betty Tang, she kind of addresses some topics that unfortunately are universal in that, you know, there's bullying that goes on against students. There's racism, as I mentioned, and how, she addresses ways in which, you know, children and, you know, adults who are their allies can support them and stand up for them. Queer identity is also explored, and I think it's a difficult thing, I think, to be an undocumented immigrant in this country, but maybe still a very hopeful and wonderful thing for children who are, you know, exploring the U.S. education system. So I hope you'll pick it up. It is a really cute, funny book.
It kept my child up way, way, way past her bedtime.
Okay. So,
it was like she could not put it down. And that was that was why I was like, okay, here's a recommendation for you, Miss Madi, because it's kid approved.
There you go. Okay, my next title is one I grabbed an advanced reading copy of as soon as I possibly could, and now I've been sitting on this, telling you about this for months. But, and I can't, I don't want to take up all the time in the podcast gushing, because I could. But it's In the Lives of Puppets by T.J. Clune. I love T.J. Clune. I think you've all heard me say that I love T.J. Clune. I love his writing. I thought his previous book was previous book for adults was Under the Whispering Door, which had some devastatingly sad moments. I mean, he always has humor. He always has a great story. There's always just a touch of romance, whether it's and whatever's going on. The last two books have been more fantasy. This one is more futuristic. You could sort of say post-apocalypse type setting. It's In the Lives of Puppets, and I took it very slowly because it was a bit of a roller coaster ride emotionally. In it, Vic Lawson starts a dangerous chain of events when he rescues a decommissioned robot from a scrapyard. He is the adopted son of Geo. Geo is a robot. He sort of in a, this is almost it's a play on Pinocchio, it's a play on Swiss Family Robinson, a little bit of Wizard of Oz, but Geo is a robot. He has raised this human child, he's a teen now, older teen. They have a fabulous found family and sort of found in the Vic keeps going to the scrapyard and rescuing things, and they fix them up, and they have this occasionally psychotic nurse robot that loves Vic, but also might snap at some other. You know, she goes back and forth. She's quite interesting. There is a he brought home and refurbished a Roomba that is definitely comic relief. And just, he's very literal and the nurse is not. So they're quite a pair together, and she often wants to kill the Roomba. But it's just a fabulously bizarre little found family, and, Vic has been told that the scrapyard isn't particularly safe and he really shouldn't keep doing this, but he does. And this last trip, he finds a decommissioned robot that he decides he's going to fix up. And whatever, it tips off the powers that be that Vic doesn't know about. And their home is attacked, and Geo is taken away. And it becomes a story of, I want my father back, and this group of found family is going to help me get that, is going to help Vic back, get Geo back. But in the process, you learn a lot of secrets that Vic has never been told. And it's sometimes heartbreaking. It's beautifully written. It's just really imaginative. It is very, that the quest to get to his father is like walking into, it's the city of electric dreams is what it's called. It's basically old Vegas that has now been taken over by, and the process of getting there is hard. The process of getting in as the only human that any of them have ever seen when humans are not supposed to exist anymore. And it's a very interesting, yes, it's a very, but it's also, it's laugh out loud funny and just wonderful. So I think everybody could, I think everybody should read T.J. Klune in whatever form he's writing, because he writes for teens. He's got a very popular teen series. He's got a romance series. He's got these fantasy novels. He's wonderful. Go read him. This one's In the Lives of Puppets.
It sounds so cinematic.
It
Have
is.
Any of
it
these
really is.
Books been made into anything
Not yet?
Yet. Yeah, I was gonna say. I'm and like it, imagining.
And all of them have such of a weird, some interesting qualities that you can do in movies now. I don't know if they'll try it, but I mean, they are very cinematic. All of them.
It's very visual. Your use of pictures in the intro is coming with that book, so I can imagine all this.
Yeah.
Really,
that's
very cool. Wow. Yeah. Excellent. So I'm going in a little bit different direction.
Yes.
I think probably in the complete different direction, but family is definitely at the heart of this. And I don't want to say too much more because this is an extremely slim book, and I could give a lot of it away by saying too much, so I'm not going to use any more words of what kind of family. But this is a book that was really quite popular a couple years ago. And it's one of those books where, honestly, the cover just drew me. I'm really into, like, woodblock or lino cuts or whatever. And it's one of those woodblock covers of a snow falling on a Dublin scape over the houses, basically. And it's one of those books that you check out over and over and over and you never get to. But I discovered that we had this one in e-audiobook and on Hoopla, very readily available. So I picked it up. Well, the reader is amazing on this one. Irish reader, just a beautiful telling. So what this book really is about, it's one of those books where the writing takes center stage. It's a very literary novel. And character development, and it's a really intimate story. You're really inside of the mind of the main character, Furlong, as he's called. It's his last name, Bill Furlong. And he's a coal merchant in 1985 in a small town in Ireland. And that will strike you right away, depending on where you grew up as a reader, because it's not the 1985 that I remember in Michigan in the suburbs. There's coal. You know, we have homes with coal. There's a lot of economic hardship, and that in and of itself was very interesting. It felt like, to me, it would have been set like 20 years earlier in the United States. So that's really interesting. But this is a very spare, slim novel about Bill Furlong, and you get pieces of his childhood. His mother was unwed and was taken in by an extremely caring employer that made his life really possible, really, that he was able to have the good life that he had with his mother. And that was not the case for a lot of unwed mothers, which is really what this is at the heart of this story. So Bill has a loving family. He has a wonderful wife and five children, and he's working so hard to provide for them. They have a very modest existence, but things are going pretty well. But something's sort of missing in his life. And it's right before Christmas. The domestic detail is just amazing, these cakes and decorating and all that. And you get this great feeling of this really tight-knit community in this village. But there's some darkness there, and that's what the story touches on. On one of his coal deliveries, he makes a discovery. And if I say anything more about what the discovery is, I do want to say it has to do with the convent in the community and some darkness in Irish history related to the convents. And this is one of these stories that really gets to the heart. It's a very kind of a classic, old-fashioned story in some ways. It's getting to the heart of those issues of, like, what does it mean? What does it mean to be a good person? What do our choices mean? What do our choices mean if they go against a community? And how do we take those actions? So there's some really deep issues in it. It was a really life-affirming novel, and I highly recommend it. Small Things Like These by Claire Keegan.
Okay. One more?
Well, I do have one more book, and it's also a graphic novel. And this is a young adult graphic novel, Sunshine, How One Camp Taught Me About Life, Death, and Hope. It's by the incredible Jarrett Krzyzewska. Wow. Very similar in some ways to the style, anyway, to Hey Kiddo, if anyone remembers that title. That was very popular and a finalist for the National Book Award. But this book is actually kind of a memoir of Jarrett's experience going off to a summer camp for terminally ill children. And I felt like the book was really more his experience and the experience of the other volunteers than it was really the perspective of the children who are there, who maybe in some cases are, you know, have cancer, have leukemia. The children are there with their families, and you know, Jarrett is portrayed as, you know, being in high school at the time, going off to volunteer here. And it's the story really of how in some ways, you know, you see families who are going through a terminal illness with a child, and how, you know, some people on the outside, including myself even, or my family members, would see that, like, oh, how depressing, or how, you know, how difficult. And almost like you want to put up a wall and not spend too much time learning about those families or communities because it seems so bleak. And that is the experience he has, you know, from his grandmother, who's like, oh, you really want to do that? That sounds awful. But he does go out there. He makes the drive. And one of the things that I thought was really comical, there's this relationship between Sister Frances, who is, you know, kind of sponsoring the trip, and another, I want to say, like a lay teacher or lay volunteer. And there's this contrast between the two. You know, one is really, you know, kind of more straight-laced in some ways, and then the teacher is, or the other volunteer is, kind of like chain smoking and making all these comments. And I found it kind of interesting because I do see that in, at least in my experience in my Catholic communities, where you see, like, there's kind of a double-sidedness to education in Catholic school, which is what I got to do, and I'm very happy I got to do that as my education experience. But he really, I think, invites the reader, he did me anyway, to just jump into the novel. I mean, it was just beautiful. I wanted to go into those pages and walk the trails. I mean, there's something about a lake at some point in the novel, and you're just looking at it, you're like, wow, being up north, and this was set in Maine. So it's just a lovely, lovely book. And his experience, of course, with trying to connect with these children who, for all, you know, to be perfectly honest, they do are looking at, you know, facing a death sooner rather than later for a child because they're seriously ill. So I hope you will check this one out. This is a beautiful book, but also a really interesting look at volunteering and with communities that you might see as like, oh, you know, I don't know. I hope we can extend more of that compassion and real interest in trying to get to know these communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was another, my daughter very much approved book.
Okay.
It was one of those where I brought it home and she was like, would not do anything else until she was done with it.
Aww.
So,
yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
Some of these graphic novels are just,
yes,
they're just really perfect, especially,
yeah,
if you have a reluctant reader. I know we've talked about that on the podcast before,
sure,
but they grab and grip in a different way.
Yeah.
The illustrations just like
yep,
this one in particular, I really wanted to jump into the book and be there and, yeah, walk on the trails and go to the mess hall. And,
yeah.
Very cool. All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
So enjoy your families, whatever form family you have, and happy reading.
Absolutely. Reading.